We ought to play Bounce Your Boobies on this program and see if that freaked Randy out, huh? We ought to do that some Friday. Welcome to the program, Two Secrets. It's about 7 past the hour. This is the Novem Radio Network. My name is Mike Malloy. And if you're listening on KTLK, you've got 1 hour and then you switch over to hockey. Oh! How are y'all doing? Everybody okay? Everybody still there? Except for the people at around the country who have been shot down in cold blood over the past 3 weeks. This is really getting weird, isn't it? I mean, just weirder and weirder and weirder. I can remember the Texas Tower shooting. Remember that, Charles Whitman? That freaked me out. What did he kill? 13, 14 people? I don't know that he was the first mass shooter in modern America. He's the first one I remember. But I do remember just thinking, how could something like that possibly come to pass? How could someone be that screwed up and be able to get their hands on guns and kill people? And it's happened again here. The shooting at Northern Illinois University left 6 people dead, including the shooter, 16 wounded. And there was a statement regarding all of this madness that was issued today by the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence, the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence, and the Violence Policy Center. They had a joint statement. I'm going to share it with you here. Our sympathies go to all those affected by this terrible tragedy. America is in a gun crisis. Yesterday's shooting at Northern Illinois University was the 6th mass shooting in less than 2 weeks. On college campuses, in malls and stores, and in our neighborhoods, our nation is paying the ultimate price for the ease with which we allow almost anyone access to increasingly powerful weaponry. Yet all too many of our elected officials remain deaf to the daily toll guns exact across our nation. Mass shootings are not a force of nature unstoppable by man. They are the predictable result of our nation's weak gun policies, and much can be done to prevent them. To prevent further mass shootings, we must begin to ratchet down the firepower that is available to civilians. For years, we have outlined proposals to reduce gun violence. We call on the presidential candidates to make gun violence prevention a priority issue. We demand that Congress hold hearings on gun violence prevention, and we urge federal and state policymakers to act immediately to implement policies such as those outlined below that will work to reduce the carnage. And then they offer 4 suggestions here. An effective ban on all semi-automatic assault weapons. In addition, the Bush administration should act immediately to better enforce the existing federal ban on the importation of foreign-made assault weapons. Second, a complete ban on high-capacity ammunition magazines that hold more than 10 rounds. Third, ensure that all gun sales at gun shows are subject to a background check. And fourth, establish a system whereby university officials are notified when a student purchases a gun from a gun dealer. The NRA, which I don't think has issued a statement yet, except guns don't kill people, people kill people. I'm sure they'll come out with a statement that'll say, "All right, all you hysterical liberals who want to take our guns, sit down and shut up. The price of liberty is eternal mass killing, so shut up." It's pretty awful. It's astonishingly bad. I'm not going to dwell on this tonight. It's just like the Israeli-Palestinian issue. You can't dwell on it. You can't talk about it. There seems to be an insoluble problem. There is no way to stop gun violence in this country. It's just not going to happen for this very simple reason. There was an attempt made in California, I believe, recently, that Schwarzenegger got behind, the legislature got behind, I think. I may have the facts skewed here, but I think the governor and the Democrats were behind this, to simply laser identify weaponry and ammunition in such a way that you could the authorities could identify where a certain bullet came from, what sort of weapon was used, and therefore track it. And I know I've got that all garbled, but don't email me what really happened. It was something like that, okay? And the NRA got behind, said no to that. And, of course, the legislature or whomever, the referendum that was going to be immediately backed down. So there, even something simple like that, the so-called taggants on ammunition, nah, not going to have it. I don't know how the NRA got so psychopathic and powerful. I used to be a member way back in the day, 35 years ago, 40 years ago. And one of the reasons that that I joined, a lot of people and you know that I hung out with joined, is because at the time, I don't do it anymore, but we used to go hunting, target shooting, and the NRA magazine was more or less an outdoor kind of thing. It was like a Field and Stream or Sports Field. And then they went crazy. And, you know, along with everyone else in this country, the whole political scene in this country is madness, utter madness. But to think that one particular lobby, the gun lobby, could maintain so much power over political candidates. And the reason they can, of course, is because most people in this country are gun sick. There's no way to get around that. They're just gun crazy. Okay, what about me? I have a permit to carry, and usually do. That came as a direct result of several serious threats on my life. And only at the urging of the Atlanta Police Department terrorist unit. This is back in the day, back in the 80s, before terrorism, yada, yada. Terrorists back then, as I've said before, all lived out here in Cobb County, which is a suburb of Atlanta. And they were racists and skinheads and religious Christian Reconstructionists, and I've had my life threatened by more so-called Christians than I had and skinheads than I care to even recount. And it used to scare the hell out of me. And finally, I just realized this is insane. So, at the urging of the APD, I learned how to handle a handgun. I'm not going to carry a rifle or a assault weapon, semi-automatic. Nah, it's not my style. So what about people like me? Well, I don't know. If you are in a job where you're threatened, or maybe, I guess, if you are fingerprinted, mugshotted, license checked, like I've been over and over and over and over again, okay, go ahead and get your weapon. But that's not how it works here. That's not how it works here. As Michael Moore tried to point out in the Columbine movie, Bowling for Columbine, Canadians have, I think, per capita as many or more guns than we do. And you don't see this up there. Well, I guess occasionally there's in other English-speaking countries, predominantly English-speaking. Sorry for the French Canadians, no offense meant. There is an occasional mass shooting like this, but nothing like it is here. And you know, the societies, the Canadian and American societies, have more in common than they do as points of difference. And again, I'm sorry if I'm offending Canadians, but it's miserable. One of the reasons I brought it up is because the funerals are starting now, and you think about the people who sent their kids off to NIU or any university. Last year it was Virginia Tech. You know, send your kids to college, for Christ's sake. Just, you know, go get an education. And then you get the phone call that your son, your daughter's dead. Why? What happened? Somebody stepped out of the shadows and started shooting. Like I say, it's like talking about the Israeli-Palestinian issue. There's, it's not going to change. Do you think? I mean, is that just a massively cynical statement on my part? I don't see it ever changing. The potential for mass killers, whether it's in shopping malls or department stores or colleges or high school campuses or just some crazed freak walking down the street who decides, well, I think I'm going to kill people today. That's what I'm going to do. I'm getting up, brush my teeth, have a cup of coffee, put on my camo outfit and my black leather jacket and take 5 or 6 weapons and walk down the street and start shooting people. Why are you going to do that? I don't know. Just feel like it. Oh, and then I'm going to kill myself. Okay, I guess I got everybody in a good mood now, so stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Georgie's gun-loving minions always greet him when he visits, and they give him a dollar or two. And because of all the loopholes they have given Georgie millions, it's insane, but sadly it's true. Oh, will he ever learn? No, he never will learn. With our fate, he's unconcerned. He will ride forever on the train of money. He's a man who never will learn.
I believe that people who are going to commit crime shouldn't have guns.
Yeah, another profound statement by Chuckle Nuts. A book came out. Steve reminds me. A book came out about 3 years ago called The Shooting Drugs. And the author makes a claim, the woman who wrote it makes a claim that in almost every single gun massacre in the U.S. since the mid-80s, the one element always exists, and that is that the shooter is taking a serotonin reuptake inhibitor drug, an antidepressant. I don't know that that's true. I haven't read the book, but the information is out there. The drugs, we're all familiar with them. Jesus, Prozac, Zoloft, Paxil, Cerazone, Luvox, Celexa, Effexor, Wellbutrin, and even Ritalin, which is amphetamines for kids. If you have a kid on Ritalin and it's working, you know, what can I say? I've got strong feelings about dosing children. I really do. I don't think it's a good idea. I think if Ritalin were available, or any of these drugs were available, when I was a kid coming up, I probably would have been put on one of these drugs, if not two or three. Which is not to say that these drugs should be totally banned, because they do help some people with these pre-existing mental conditions. But then tonight on the news, didn't it come out that this 27-year-old who committed this latest mass killing was on drugs, on prescription meds, and had stopped taking his meds? So I don't know. I don't like to talk about it, just like I don't like to talk about the Israeli-Palestinian situation, because what are you going to say? Oh, it's a bad thing. Yeah, okay, it's a bad thing. We need some kind of gun control. Yeah, okay. Gun control is never going to happen in this country. Right. Oh, okay. Speaking of the Israeli-Palestinian issue, yesterday Amnesty International sent out a press release about the destruction of West Bank villages by the Israeli army. They cite a couple of examples here. Every single home in the West Bank villages of Homsa and Hadidiya, Palestinian villages, every single home is slated for destruction. The Israeli army has declared most of the Jordan Valley, where the villages are situated, as a, quote, closed military area, end quote, from which the local Palestinian population is to be forcibly removed and barred from ever returning. Jesus, God. The local Palestinian population, which has been there since long before Israeli troops occupied the area for 40 years ago, that area is being put under increasing pressure, or the Palestinians in the area are being put under increasing pressure to get out, leave. On the morning of the 6th of February, this month, Israeli army bulldozers destroyed the homes and livelihoods of 4 Palestinian families in Hadidiya, in the Jordan Valley area of the occupied West Bank. More than 30 people, including some 20 children, and their livestock were left without shelter, just told to get out. In the past year, other Palestinian families in the area have suffered the same fate. The Israeli army served demolition orders on all of the residents of Hodeidah in April of 2007, giving them 10 days to leave their homes. Most of them had to move to nearby Humsa, which is now targeted, which is about a kilometer away from Hodeidah. I don't know. Do you think it's okay? Do you think there's no problem with this? 4 months after that, in August, last summer, Israeli army bulldozers destroyed tents that were being used in Humsa, leaving 40 villagers homeless. And on the 3rd of January this year, Israeli forces destroyed 12 homes in Fasail, further south in the Jordan Valley. The Palestinian villagers have to travel miles to get water for their basic needs, but even this is made difficult. Israeli military checkpoints and blockades restrict their movements on main roads, and last August, their tractors and water tanks were confiscated by Israeli soldiers. The villagers could only retrieve these vital items after paying a large fine. In contrast, Israeli settlements, according to Amnesty International, established in blatant violation of international law, continue to be expanded in the area, and Israeli settlers are allowed to move freely and use vast quantities of water. And it goes on and on and on. Just like mass killings in this country and gun violence, it will not stop. The exploitation of innocent Palestinians in the occupied territories will continue. It's not going to stop. You would think, wouldn't you? I think this, that at this point in human development, and this may be just way off base, I would think that we would be able to figure out how two peoples, the Jews and the Palestinian Arabs who live in this little strip of land, and are, if you check their genetic structure, they are brothers and sisters, that they would learn to somehow live together, even though they have different religions and different goals, and that you would also think, wouldn't you, that in the United States of America, at this point in our development, that we would have learned how to stop mass killings by gun violence. You'd think that, wouldn't you? Huh?
That if God is on our side, he'll stop the next war.
Yeah.
Psst. You're listening to Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
It's about 25 before the hour. Chucklenuts has spoken again. He gave an interview to the BBC, and he cited the London July 7 bombings. Remember that? And he used that as an example of why he supports torture, waterboarding, torture. In an interview with the BBC, he said information obtained from alleged terrorists helped save lives. No, not in London, not in the London bombings. He said the families of the July 7 victims would understand that. Bush said waterboarding, though, was not torture and is threatening to veto a bill that would ban it. In the interview, he went on to defend the existence of Guantanamo Bay, where many of those caught up in the U.S. war on terror are held, and claimed that U.S. was a defender of human rights. Jesus, God. Yeah, we're a defender of human rights. We have swept up people from God knows how many countries. A lot of these folks came from Afghanistan. Some of them are goat herders and cab drivers and pushcart operators who were sold off as terrorists by whatever faction of crazy people in Afghanistan who said, oh, well, the Americans are here. Let's sell them some terrorists. And Bush, in his abysmal monumental global ignorance and stupidity refers to those people as the worst of the worst in terrorists, not knowing anything about them. None of them have had their cases aired out in a habeas corpus hearing where the charges against them could be aired out to make sure that the charges were real. Now, none of that has happened, but Bush doesn't understand that and therefore doesn't care about it. In the BBC interview, he insisted that the United States still occupies the moral high ground worldwide. Would that were true, George. He stood by his decision to remove Saddam Hussein. Oh, and he said he would attend the Beijing Olympics. Now, while he's saying that waterboarding is not torture, Stephen Bradbury, head of the Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel, giving evidence to a congressional committee, when was it, yesterday, said the following, quote, this is congressional testimony. Let me be clear, though. There has been no determination by the Justice Department that the use of waterboarding under any circumstances would be lawful under current law. So what is he saying? There's been no determination that it's lawful, which means until that determination is made, it's illegal. It's unlawful. George W. Bush adds to his rap sheet that of a co-conspirator in torture. This is it's astonishing, isn't it? And the dumb bastard sits there with the BBC and with his arrogance and his bullheadedness and his bullying cowardly attitude and says, yeah, uh-huh, we do that. That's right. That's not torture. Mm-mm. Ripping somebody's fingers off their hands, no, that's not torture. Attaching electrodes to their testicles if they're males and giving them a couple hundred jolts. No, that's not torture. That's tough interrogation techniques, but it's not torture. Cutting the heads off children in front of their parents, that's not torture. No. Sometimes you have to do that if you want to stop the terrorists. And, if the Democrats would just go ahead and sign off on my Protect America bill so we could tap all their phones, then all this would stop. And he seems to think that history, state of being that he doesn't believe exists, that history will judge the decisions that he's making as good and necessary. He honestly believes that. Regarding Guantanamo, where we've held hundreds of prisoners for years without trial, he told the BBC he would, quote, I'd like it to be empty, but I'm comfortable with recognizing this is still a dangerous world. It's a dangerous world, so, ain't going to be empty. He went on to say, quote, there's some people that need to be tried. Some people there that need to be tried. And he goes on, and there will be a trial, and they'll have their day in court, unlike what they did to other people. Uh-huh. So George Bush already knows, because he is Jesus' little brother, so he knows. These are all guilty people at Guantanamo, and they'll have their trial, and their day in court, unlike what they did to other people. He went on to the BBC. Now, there's great concern about this, and I can understand that these people be given rights. They're not willing to grant the same rights to others. They'll murder, but, you got to understand, they're getting rights. And I'm comfortable with the decisions we've made. George Bush has pulled this country down to the level of international terrorists. George Bush is a terrorist. And commenting again on his legacy to the BBC, he listed as pluses what he's done in Afghanistan, the utter and absolute slaughter of God only knows, or Allah only knows how many people this perverted son of a bitch has been responsible for killing. Who knows? Iraq, where we know he's responsible for the deaths of anywhere from 600,000 to 1 million innocent Iraqis and nearly 3,000 American soldiers and Marines. Oh, and he says he's also, he knows he's going to be recognized for his recognition of the right of Palestinians to their own state. Here's what he said, quote, dealing with liberating 25 million in Afghanistan as part of what I hope people think of when they look at my presidency, being the first president to propose a two-state solution on Israel and Palestine. I mean, there's a lot of other issues, and I'm happy with Iraq. He's the first president to propose a two-state solution for Israel and Palestine? Really? He's the first one? I didn't know that. And he goes on to say, and I'm confident that if America does not become isolationist, you know, and allow the terrorists to take back over, Iraq will succeed. Oh, my God. No, I've changed my mind. I keep changing my mind, just back and forth, back and forth. I don't give a damn who winds up with the Democratic Party nomination. I will vote for that person just to get this son of a bitch and these Republicans out of Dodge. I don't care who is running for the House and the Senate. I don't care if they have taken millions in corporate dollars. If there's a D after their names, I will vote for them. You know why? Because I'm sick of this miserable bastard. I am sick of the Republican Party. And I'm sick of this failed philosophy of conservatism. Well, Mike, a lot of the Democrats are conservative, too. Yeah, that's right. They are. And once we get those rotten Democrats in office, then by God, we can challenge them in primaries and get some good ones in. Right? You know, I liberated 25 million Afghanis. Afghans, them people over. Speaking of the London bombings, did you see this? It's in the Guardian of the UK today. BAE Systems, that's a British defense and aerospace company in the UK, worldwide interest. Particularly here in North America, they have a subsidiary, BAE Systems, Inc. BAE is the world's third largest weapons manufacturer and the largest in Europe. Turns out there's a lawsuit going on where BAE is involved. Turns out that as a result of this lawsuit, it's a matter of court records now in the UK that Saudi Arabia's rulers threatened to make it easier for terrorists to attack London unless investigations of corruption into their arms deals were halted. Remember, was it last summer when that story hit the international press? It was in the New York Times, Washington Post, the papers in the UK, leading European papers. Oh, my God, look here. The Saudis, look what they've done. Corruption, payoffs. So an investigation was started. And secret files, now a matter of court record, describe how investigators were told that they faced another 7/7. That's July 7th. The train bombings in London, and the loss of, quote, British lives on British streets, quote, if, unquote, if they pressed on with their inquiries and the Saudis carried out their threat to cut off intelligence. Son of a bitch, can you believe this? Now, these are Bush family business partners. This is that putrid, filthy, disgusting Saudi royal family again. Is there anything that is corrupt and criminal and degenerate and absolutely laced and loaded with terrorism that the royal family of Saudi Arabia is not involved in? You want the quick answer? No. You want the long answer? Hell no. Prince Bandar, the guy who used to be the emissary to the United States, the one who knew about the invasion of Iraq by George W. Bush before the American people or the Congress knew about it. He's also the head of the Saudi National Security Council, and he's the son of the Crown Prince. And he was alleged in court to be the man behind the threats to hold back information about suicide bombers and terrorists. And this is the son of a bitch that took a billion pounds in secret payments from BAE, the world's third largest weapons manufacturer. So when the investigation starts, he says, if you continue, we will allow them to come through and kill you.
I heard the girls are sweeter there. Have a water.
I take great comfort in knowing that they don't know what they're talking about, because history takes a long time for it to reach, and there's no such thing as short-term history.
10 before the hour. So back to this Prince Bandar and the Saudis. They threatened to make it easier for terrorists to attack London unless the corruption investigations into their arms deals were halted. It's in the courts now in the UK, and the arms dealer, BAE, the world's third largest arms dealer, largest in Europe, allegedly paid Prince Bandar, one of these filthy Saudi bandits, £1 billion in secret payments. And Bandar was accused in yesterday's high court hearings of flying to London in December 2006 and uttering threats, which made the Prime Minister then, Tony Blair, force an end to the Serious Fraud Office, that's what it's called, Serious Fraud Office, investigation into bribery involving Bandar and his family. The Prime Minister of the UK called off the investigation after being threatened by Prince Bandar. Can you believe this? So the threats halted the fraud inquiry. It came to a screeching halt. But there was an international outcry. By God, I must have missed it. With allegations that Britain had broken international anti-bribery treaties. Oh, are there such a thing? Really? Anti-bribery treaties? Ha 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 ha! Who honors those? Lord Justice Moses. Hearing the civil case with Mr. Justice Sullivan in the UK, said the government appeared to have, quote, rolled over, end quote, after the threats. The Lord Justice, which I guess is what? The equivalent of our Chief Justice in the Supreme Court. The Lord Justice said one possible view was that it was, quote, just as if a gun had been held to the head of the government, end quote. By whom, gentle listener? By these pigs in the Saudi royal family, who are longtime supporters of and partners with George W. Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush. What does it take in this country? For Christ's sake, his grandfather supported the Nazis. Prescott Bush was a financier for the Nazis. And now this. It never stops with this family. It never stops. Now, what do you think, now that all these accusations are in court, what do you think George W. Bush is going to do? Oh, stuff like that happens. There's no history. What? About the Saudis? Yeah, good friends of ours. What? I don't know what you're talking about. The Serious Fraud Office investigation began in 2004 when the director of that government office studied evidence unearthed by the Guardian of the UK. This revealed that massive secret payments were going from the arms manufacturer, BAE, to Saudi Arabian princes to promote arms deals. So they began an investigation. Prince Bandar goes to London, says to Tony Blair, call off the investigation. We will come over here and goddamn kill you. You think July 7th was bad? Let me tell you something, Mr. Blair. We will come over here and blow your whole city up. Oh, okay. And it stopped. Yesterday, anti-corruption campaigners began a legal action to overturn that decision to halt the case. They want to start it again. They want the original investigation restarted, arguing that the UK, the British government, had caved into blackmail. A paper trail set out in court showed that days after Prince Bandar flew to London to lobby the British government to get off his ass, Tony Blair wrote to the Attorney General, Lord Goldsmith, and the Serious Fraud Office was told to halt its investigation. Now. Bush crime family, Saudi crime family. This is astonishing. Now, is that, you know, I didn't hear any of that on the news today. Anybody hear any of that? This is from The Guardian today. Huge. BAE, the world's third largest weapons manufacturer, third largest purveyor of death, the largest in Europe, paying blackmail to this punk-ass Prince Bandar in Saudi Arabia, who then turns around when investigation is started and threatens the government of the UK, if you don't call off your dogs, we will come over and bomb the Christ out of you. We will kill and lacerate and destroy, and your streets will run red with blood. Now call off, or something like that. But by God, it was serious enough that Tony Blair, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, called off the investigation. I think I missed that on the news. I got to stop watching Sesame Street. See, this is what happens when you have a 3.5-year-old, you know, and all this stuff is going down. I'm sure it was all over ABC, NBC, CNN, CNBC, WLMNBC, ABC, DEFG, HIJ, Fox, Clocks, Crocs, Socks, and Mocks, all over the place, wasn't it? Evidence that Prince Bandar and the Saudi royal family blackmailed the government of the UK to call off an investigation of fraud, graft, and corruption, or the streets of London would run red with blood. I miss that. Son of a bitch, Kathy. You're going to have to get me a new cable system or something so I can go somewhere and not watch Sesame Street, because I know that my news media reported that story to me today, and somehow I missed it. The Bush family's business partners. Is it so hard to understand then? It certainly isn't for me. Why Bush sees the legislative branch of government in this country as a flea to be flicked off his blue jeans. When he has business partners, and his family has had business partners for decades, who can go up to the Prime Minister of the UK and say, call off your dogs or we'll blow your ass up, and the dogs are called off, you think Bush and his family is scared of, oh, I don't know who, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton? Get real. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Last one I've got here, and then we're going to go to your phone calls. Do you know there is a Democratic member of Congress? He's the chairman of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, who actually has some courage. Sylvester Reyes. he sent a letter to the Bush bastard regarding this ongoing battle over warrantless wiretapping, right? And those criminal acts. I hate using the term warrantless wiretapping, because it's become one of those terms like, I don't know, pick a term, can opener. After you say it enough times, it doesn't mean anything. Warrantless wiretapping, warrantless wiretapping. What time is it? Actually, what we're talking about here is criminal activity on a part of the executive branch of government with its co-conspirators, corporate America. A little bit more there than just warrantless wiretapping. Oh, can opener. So this is what Sylvester Reyes wrote. Mr. President, the preamble to our Constitution states that one of our highest duties as public officials is to, quote, provide for the common defense, end quote. As an elected member of Congress, a senior member of the House Armed Services Committee, and chairman of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, I work every day to ensure that our defense and intelligence capabilities remain strong in the face of serious threats to our national security. Because I care so deeply about protecting our country, I take strong offense to your suggestion in recent days that the country will be vulnerable to terrorist attack unless Congress immediately enacts legislation giving you broader powers to conduct warrantless surveillance of Americans' communications and provide legal immunity for telecom companies that participated in this administration's warrantless surveillance program. Today, the National Security Agency, NSA, has authority to conduct surveillance in at least three different ways, all of which provide strong capability to monitor the communications of possible terrorists. First, NSA can use its authority under Executive Order 12333 to conduct surveillance abroad of any known or suspected terrorists. There is no requirement for a warrant. There is no requirement for probable cause. Most of NSA's collection occurs under this authority. Second, NSA can use its authority under the Protect America Act, enacted last August, to conduct surveillance here in the U.S. of any foreign target. This authority does not expire on Saturday, as you have stated. Under the Protect America Act, orders authorizing surveillance may last for 1 year, or at least until August 2008. These orders may cover every terrorist group without limitation. If a new member of the group is identified, or if a new phone number or email address is identified, the NSA may add it to the existing orders and surveillance can begin immediately. In other words, we will not go dark. Third, in the remote possibility that a new terrorist organization emerges that we have never previously identified, the NSA could use existing authority under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, FISA, to monitor those communications. Since its establishment nearly 30 years ago, the FISA court has approved nearly every application for a warrant from the Department of Justice. In an emergency, NSA or the FBI may begin surveillance immediately, and a FISA court order does not have to be obtained for 3 days. The former head of FISA operations for the Department of Justice has testified publicly that emergency authorization may be granted in a matter of minutes. As you know, the 1978 FISA law, which has been modernized and updated numerous times since 9/11, was instrumental in disrupting the terrorist plot in Germany last summer. Those who say that FISA is outdated do not understand the strength of this important tool. If our nation is left vulnerable in the coming months, it will not be because we don't have enough domestic spying powers. It will be because your administration has not done enough to defeat terrorist organizations, including Al-Qaeda, that have gained strength since 9/11. We do not have nearly enough linguists to translate the reams of information we currently collect. We do not have enough intelligence officers who can penetrate the hardest targets, such as Al-Qaeda. We have surged so many intelligence resources into Iraq that we have taken our eye off the ball in Afghanistan and Pakistan. As a result, you have allowed Al-Qaeda to reconstitute itself on your watch. You have also suggested that Congress must grant retroactive immunity to telecommunications companies. As someone who has been briefed on our most sensitive intelligence programs, I can see no argument why the future security of our country depends on whether past actions of telecom companies are immunized. The issue of telecom liability should be carefully considered based on a full review of the documents that your administration withheld from Congress for 8 months. However, it is an insult to the intelligence of the American people to say that we will be vulnerable unless we grant immunity for actions that happened years ago. Congress has not been sitting on its hands. Last November, the House passed responsible legislation to authorize the NSA to conduct surveillance of foreign terrorists and to provide clarity and legal protection to our private sector partners who assist in that surveillance. The proper course is now to conference the House bill with the Senate bill that was passed on Tuesday. There are significant differences between these two bills, and a conference in regular order is the appropriate mechanism to resolve the differences between these two bills. I urge you, Mr. President, to put partisanship aside and allow Republicans in Congress to arrive at a compromise that will protect America and protect our Constitution. I, for one, do not intend to back down, not to the terrorists and not to anyone, including a president who wants Americans to cower in fear. We are a strong nation. We cannot allow ourselves to be scared into suspending the Constitution. If we do that, we might as well call the terrorists and tell them they've won. Sincerely, Sylvester Reyes, Chairman, House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, and Democrat. Now, you can find this at various places around the Internet. I pulled it off of rawstory.com. How about that, huh? Let's have a hand for Sylvester Reyes. Mr. Bush, go screw yourself. Isn't that what Sylvester sang? Where's he from, New York? I believe he's from New York, isn't he? Jesus, God. A Democrat. An actual Democrat who put it in writing and sent it to the piglet in the White House. How about that? Sylvester Reyes for president. You gotta applaud those candles in the dark rather than remain silent while the darkness closes in, right? Good for you, Congressman Reyes. All right, we have a break coming up here. When we come back from the break, we are going to take your phone calls. So the number here is 800-989-1480. So bring it on, as they say. In the meantime, we shall play some commercials for you. How's that? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Congress, kneel down and lend a hand. Tell the people liberty must go. There's more to gain in war than peace. Let the weapons flow. Destabilize the Middle East. Enrich the CEO. Lie down, people. Lay down your Bill of Rights. Tell James Madison we had to let those amendments go.
Do not go gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Let's do some phone calls before I get more people pissed off. In the first segment, you know, like I say, the two topics that I shudder to deal with, gun violence in this country and the Israeli-Palestinian violence in the Middle East. And usually when I talk about those, I used to get, you know, letters, emails accusing me of being an anti-Semite. I don't get those anymore, but what I get are emails from people saying, I'll never listen to your goddamn program again. So I don't know which is worse. All right, let's go to your phone calls. Patrick is calling from Portland, listening on KPOJ. Hey, Patrick.
intelligent, Mike. You are a genius, and I'm a huge fan. And I think I identify with you because I used to write the news myself in the wilds of Wyoming.
Oh, yeah?
But I'm not. Yeah. And I saw in your biography, Rex Sian, but I'm not here to blow smoke up either one of us. I'm here to talk about the torture debate is really just the tip of the iceberg as far as it's been portrayed. And I know you've been on the telecom issue with your beautiful harangues and rhetoric to keep on that, but someone needs to stay on torture, and as evidence that it goes deeper, I offer two items. One is a documentary that's been released nationally called Taxi to the Dark Side. Perhaps you've heard of it.
Taxi to the Dark Side?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And the second item is a collection of FOIA documents as obtained and released through the ACLU in book form at every major bookstore, and it's called The Administration of Torture, and you can actually see the Pentagon's own autopsy reports. And roughly out of 100 questionable deaths in our detainee and secret prisons, 39 were ruled homicides by our own administration or our Pentagon.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think anyone's really talking about how deep and nasty it goes, and I think that's atrocious.
No,
Civil rights are important.
For some reason, I drifted away from that topic. I can remember about 2 years ago when the murders of detainees at Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan got some attention. We featured that on this program prominently. We had people from the we had people on who categorically defined those detainee deaths as nothing short of out-and-out clear murder. Now, the only caveat was that it appeared that the U.S. military was not, it was not a hands-on operation by a soldier or a Marine or a special forces in uniform. These were more of the so-called private contractors who are ex-Army, former Marine, come from the U.S. Armed Services, but that the murders had been had been perpetrated or committed, I should say, by members of the CIA, the NSA, or private contractors. So yeah,
well,
I'm
not here to bash our soldiers. As a matter of fact,
right.
I'm a National Guardsman myself. And these two sources that I mentioned offer very strong and convincing proof. You know, much like Billy Budd, perhaps, story, or more recently, A Few Good Men, that this was sanctioned at the highest levels,
sure.
Namely Donald Rumsfeld's office, and if he didn't play such imaginative legal games, perhaps the vice president as well.
Right.
But no, I don't mean to impugn our soldiers.
Their
impulses that they can control.
Right. No. I didn't mean to suggest that that was part of your commentary. I just meant that that's what came up a couple of years ago.
Sure.
When we were addressing this issue, and you are right. I do need to focus more on that because it is that
not
sort.
Not just you. The whole mainstream media is asleep at the switch on this thing.
Well, mainstream media is not going to do it. They simply are not going to they're not going to touch it. But
all the documents are there. I don't understand. I used to be a reporter myself. I mean, it's as official as you can get.
Well, just because the documents are there doesn't mean this corrupted corporate media is going to pay any attention to it.
You're correct. Yeah.
Right. All right, Patrick. Thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Okay.
All right. Keep beating that drum. Good luck. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Patrick. Yeah, we do need to focus more on this program about what I mean. Sometimes I don't know where to begin about what this corrupt fascist administration is doing to this country, or has done to us. You know, to have as part of your a primary part of your foreign policy the torture of people whom you may suspect as having some sort of involvement in something, to torture them. Jesus Christ. And don't tell me about the arguments of the ticking bomb. Well, what are you going to do if you find out there's a ticking bomb in downtown L.A. or midtown Manhattan and this guy knows where it is? You got to torture him to get it out. That's such nonsense. It's such BS. But we have been turned into a cheapened, barbaric society by the Bush crime family. The rest of the world knows it. And I'm surprised to find out that Tony Blair, according to testimony going on in the UK, that Tony Blair allowed himself to be blackmailed by this pig Bandar of Saudi Arabia. Astonishing.
I'm afraid I can't help it. I'm afraid I can't. I'm afraid of America. I'm afraid of the world. I'm afraid I can't help it. I'm afraid I can't. I'm afraid of America.
And your day screaming with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
Twenty-five before the hour. AJ is calling from the Catskills, listening on the internet. AJ, welcome to the program.
Hey, handsome. How you doing tonight?
Oh, getting by.
Good, good. I would, yeah, I would consider it poor form to a breach of radio talk show etiquette to embarrass the host. So I'm going to avoid bringing up the fact that a couple of weeks ago, when I said I would vote for any Democrat because I wanted to stop the bleeding, that you scoffed.
I did.
Yes, I'm going to. I'm not going to bring that up.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I'm behind the curve sometimes, and I still keep thinking that the Democrats are the same Democrats as, oh, I don't know, the Adlai Stevenson. Now somebody will jump on me about that. Democrats mm-hmm. back in the late 50s, and they're not. And
no.
So I keep waiting to see if there's a Democrat that is, you know, for working people, for union people, for single payer health care. I don't mean this. I don't like to hear the words chopped up the way Clinton and Obama do it. Single payer, and
yeah.
Neither one of them will say it. So
yeah, I
keep looking for that kind of Democrat, but and I guess I got to stop. I guess I have to take what's available or vote for insane McCain,
or stay home.
Yeah,
you put your finger on it before. You know, as long as there's a D after their name, that's all we need right now. And then later on, we'll deal with subtleties. I'm full of questions tonight, albeit rhetorical ones, but about this shooting. I, you know, brought up the CNN's website last night, and there it was again. And
right.
And they were holding a vigil, yet another vigil. And I'm wondering, first of all, when are we going to address how we treat the mentally ill in this country?
Or let me inject, how we make people mentally ill.
Well, that's all part of it. And,
right.
And part of it is, I think, what we have to address ultimately is how we're bringing up men in this country.
Yeah.
And when are we going to stop pandering to the NRA?
Quick answer, never. Long
answer.
I
know.
Yeah. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen, AJ.
Well, I'll tell you, there are a few things that when these things happen, and they've been happening with amazing regularity lately,
yeah.
There's a few things that drive me to the brink of a stroke. And one of them is this idea of, you know, we didn't think it could happen here.
Yeah, yeah.
And if for no other reason, for just to preserve my own sanity, I've sort of decided, yeah, it can happen here.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want it to happen to me and my loved ones, but I don't think that where I live and this little piece of real estate that I live on is exempt.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's my great fear. My wife, you know, Liza works in a school system. Of course. And it's happening, you know, until every school and mall is red with blood. Apparently, this is just going to continue. But what really drives me insane is when they start praying, and when they start praying to Jesus, and particularly this subhuman, the term I used last time you and I spoke was trocar. This trocar in the White House who keeps saying, you know, we send them our prayers, we send them our blessings. God damn it, that's not what we need, and it's not doing anybody any good.
No, of course not.
And it's just, you know, I'm already ready for the next one. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to happen again. Right now, Bush was absolutely correct. Right now, there are terrorists planning attacks on the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But the enemy is us.
Sure.
And we are manufacturing our own enemies and our own terror in this country. And, you know, whether it's someone as malevolent as Timothy McVeigh or as ill as this person seemed to be, it doesn't make a difference. People are dying in this country. They're not dying in Iraq. They're dying here on our soil.
Yeah.
And, I feared that this is going to be one of those phone calls where I have nothing intelligent to say at the end of it, but there it is.
Well, it doesn't matter. Intelligence in this society, for the most part, is inoperable, and it has been for quite some time. So
yeah.
What are you left with? You're left with emotion. I know that's what I'm left with.
Yeah.
I live pretty much most of my life now on raw emotion, and sometimes I feel that's like living on raw sewage. And I'm not sure what to do about it. I try. I'm sure you have your means of diversion, your family. That's what I do. Friends. But I can't look at any problem that we're faced with as a society more and say, well, here's the intelligent answer. The intelligent solution, because I know that that's an exercise in absolute total futility.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'm going to leave you. I will end the call on a note of delight.
Oh, good.
Oedipus Tex is about to throw his support behind John McCain. He's about to endorse him.
Well, the old man did today.
Yeah, I know he did, but the jerko is going to do that in a couple of days.
Yeah.
And I think that is tantamount to kissing a typhoid carrier right smack on the lips. And I cannot wait for McCain to be linked to this monster in the White House and see him do a two-step trying to go towards him and away from him for the next 9 months at the same time. I'm very much looking forward to seeing that dance.
Well, you know, me too, but the one image of John McCain that is forever burned into my brain is that picture of George Bush and John McCain on a stage someplace, and Bush has got his arm up, and McCain has his arms wrapped around Bush, with McCain's face buried in his shirt front, about 3 inches, 3 inches away from George Bush's armpit.
Yeah.
And this was long after the George W. Bush murder machine accused McCain of being a coward, his wife of being a drug-addled whore, and his child of being an illegitimate, dark-skinned baby that the good white people of South Carolina would want to stay a million miles away from. And there is this broken son-of-a-bitch McCain sucking George Bush's armpit. And the look on George Bush's face is one of utter and absolute bliss. The look on McCain's face is one of absolute servility and humility. And I swear to God, if this guy becomes president, adios.
Yeah, it'll be, well, I think it'll be a fun campaign. Mike, better dead than red.
Yeah, I hear you. Thanks, AJ.
And thank you for your good work, and thank Kathy for her good work.
I'll do it. All right,
peace.
Thanks, AJ. The Music Factory from the Catskills. Thanks. Hey, Kathy, he said to thank you for your good work. Oh, you heard that? Oh, you have your headphones on. And thanks to the number of people who sent this to me. Sylvester Reyes is from El Paso, Texas. I said New York. Oh, God, I'm sorry. I said I didn't know. But he's the one that wrote the MASH note to George W. Bush and more or less told him to go screw himself where it concerns trying to stampede members of Congress into... who was it that said, George is going... Oh, it was Boehner. That's right, the crybaby, the little rat bastard Boehner who led all the brain-dead Republicans out of the House the other day. It was Boehner that said, and the president is even thinking about canceling his trip to Africa because of this. That's what they're doing. That's what the Democrats are doing. I think the little winged monkey is on his way, isn't he, Kathy? He's on his way to Africa that he considers. He considers Africa. I don't know where he puts Egypt, because as far as Bush is concerned, Africa is, you know, where those black people live. It's just one mishmash of countries, you know? He doesn't even see it as countries. It's just a whole bunch of people with bones in their noses running around.
Yeah, and I'm sure that those Africans were just so depressed when they heard that Bush might not come if he didn't get to illegally wiretap Americans.
Yeah. It just all those people who are struggling through these endless civil wars as a result of these phony, fake-ass subdivisions of their societies and tribal lives that were put in place 2-3 centuries ago by white Europeans who are now struggling. I can't get over what's going on in Kenya. It's or wherever. Pick a country. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, see, that just proves it to you. No, I'll tell you what it proves to you if you're willing to have the courage to take a look at African history and the imperialism, the colonialism, that divided countries, that produced boundaries of countries that were just nonsense, and resulted in simmering rivalries that have been going on for a couple of hundred years now and explode every once in a while in these orgies of blood and death. Oh, God, never mind. Boy, what a crappy-ass program tonight. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
He's the man who'll do what's right for me and you. Now Republicans and Democrats and independents too. Well, they all like what W's done. I know that you will too. George W. Bush will give a country a push. Put us back on the road to what's right and true. George W. Bush is gonna give us a push.
Yeah. I'd say penny for your thoughts,
nobody home.
But it seems you're out of stock,
there's nobody home.
When I ask if I can count on you,
nobody home.
You take off your gloves and shoes,
there's nobody home.
The sign says there's no vacancy, as you stare at me vacantly. The lights are out, but I can't.
Africa's a nation that suffers from incredible disease.
See what I mean?
I love your smile, but when you
Africa's a nation that suffers from incredible disease. See what I mean?
Africa's a nation that suffers from incredible disease.
I mean, this is the kind of ass wipe we have as President of the United States. Africa is a country that suffers from incredible disease. Or a nation. Africa is a nation.
If you'd said country, you could have almost given him partial credit.
Nah.
For continent. I mean, they both start with C.
Oh.
So I would have said, well, he was trying to say continent.
Africa is a nation that suffers from incredible disease. We have years, decades to go to try to undo the damage that this rat bastard has perpetrated against the United States. It's astonishing. It's about 9 before the hour. Jeff is calling from Atlanta. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Mike. Bush came out, the other day and, did his little bit about, good morning, everybody. There are now terrorists planning to attack us in ways that'll make September 11th look like tiny stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it just started reminding me, and then he announced that, there would be trials, et cetera. And then what you read from Sylvester Reyes earlier tonight, maybe it's just a thing of mine, but it's something I think we've really got to keep reminding people because of what the right wing has done over the last 30, 40 years. They've tried to remove any sense of honor and self-respect, you know, not only from individuals, but from the whole society. And when, like, Bush came out there and made it like a grand gesture that he would think about having trials for some of these guys in Guantanamo, it goes back to this theme on the right that has been trying to convince us that the only reason you would be caring about torture or trials or fair trials or evidence is because you got some sort of excessive concern for the defendants or victims. And gone, just slipping away, is this notion that, no, the reason we do these things is because of what we expect of ourselves. Mm-hmm. We don't sit there and think about what kind of a defendant we might be dealing with before we decide to have a trial or a fair trial or torture, whatever. We first think about, and we did this in the Constitution, what kind of people we wanted to be.
That's right.
You know, we don't torture not just because, you know, it's wrong for the victim, but we don't want to be torturers.
Right.
And we don't want to be a society of torturers. And we have trials not because we're magnanimous and grant this to people, but because we want to be a fair people who obey our own laws. And they've tried to just completely erase that notion and make it some sort of weakness, some sort of liberal, you know, weak need sympathy for defendants and victims and stuff. And we've got to remember that, no, this is about ourselves. It's about honor and what kind of society we want to have.
That's absolutely right on target, Jeff. You're absolutely right. Thanks
Thank
a lot,
you,
man. All right, I appreciate what you had to say. That is so true. And the right wing, who are just they're bloody. The Republican Party has become the party of death and superstition. You know, Jeff is right. And when you consider that the chief cheerleader for this madness is this Rush Limbaugh. And did you notice today in the New York Times at least a 1,500-word article about Rush Limbaugh as being one of the leaders of the conservative movement in this country? He is not a leader of the conservative movement. He is a murderous son of a bitch who supports torture, death to children, bombing of innocents. Is that conservative? And I'm so sick of seeing this number that he has 13 million listeners a week. No, he doesn't. That comes from that filthy rag Talkers magazine, which is nothing but a front publication for the neocon right in this country. But there it was in the New York Times. 1,500 words devoted to the pig man because of his attacks on John McCain. And all of a sudden, he's starting to backpedal now. Well, maybe McCain isn't so bad. All right, we can find common ground. Do you want a President Hillary? You want that bitch in there? This country has degenerated to the point where a drug-addled, drug peddling, using illegal, and I'm not, you know, if you smoke reefer or do peyote or eat mushrooms, good for you. This pig son of a bitch uses pharmaceutical drugs and gets his housekeeper to go stand in the parking lot of, what was it, Kathy, Byright or someplace? Denny's, to score his drugs. And then gets out of the case against him. Weasels out. How did he do that? Well, he was thinner then. And look at him now. Every time I see video of him now, or the picture of the New York Times today, this huge, bloated, hideous-looking man who sits behind that microphone and leads 5-6 million people a week into this abyss of idiocy and hate and filth and pro-torture and just awful stuff. And he laughs at them. He laughs at them. Why do I care? I don't know. We have a break here. We'll come back and raise some more hell. Third hour of the program's coming up, so stick around. We will take your phone call. If you're not on hold, The phone number here is 800-989-1480. And, yeah, don't forget Saturday, a week from tomorrow night in Phoenix, Scott Ritter and me, courtesy NovaM Radio and KPHX Radio. Check it out. Go to the website, 1480kphx.com. I sure am looking forward to seeing some of you folks. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It's 6 and a half past the hour. This is the Malloy program on Nova M. Let me share this email with you. I'm going to leave the name off. It's from Madison, Wisconsin. Dear Mike, my beloved daughter attends Northern Illinois University, NIU. On Thursday, I spent a few very long moments trying like hell to contact her, moments of increasing terror because I had no other information other than there had been a shooting similar to one at Virginia Tech. I finally reached her father, who lives in DeKalb and works at NIU, or I guess they call it DeKalb in Illinois, works at NIU. He assured me that she was fine and that phone service was disrupted because of the shootings. A few minutes later, she called me, and we both cried with relief and a couple of thousand other emotions. Listen, Mike, I can't buy this stuff about mental illness being the cause of this kind of crime. I've coped with mental illness myself. There are millions of Americans who deal with some form of mental illness, some better than others. Granted, this country makes it harder and harder for people with any kind of illness to get the help they need. But please, don't let anyone try to lay this crime on the doorsteps of the mentally ill. I've been deeply depressed, suicidal, and full of despair in my time, but it has never, ever occurred to me to purchase weapons and kill people before taking my own life. It doesn't occur to most people with mental and emotional problems. Every time something like this happens, people dismiss the murderer as crazy or mentally disturbed. It's a convenient tag, but what this kid wasn't something brought up from the mire of... But what this kid wasn't was something brought up, apparently my writer left a word or two out here, from the mire of mental disturbance. This was rage, pure and simple. Rage made this kid do this horrible crime, hatred and rage. And listen, I know how you feel about spiritual beliefs. I have some, but I don't go about trying to convince anyone that my beliefs are real and should be followed. If people in that community, my daughter included, want to have candlelight vigils and prayer vigils, let them. Let them pray. Let them gather and mourn and find solace in each other's company. Let them reach out with love and comfort one another. It beats picking up a gun, doesn't it? Peace to you and your family. And then the name. Well, number one, if you got the impression I was talking about the mentally ill being responsible for this, I either wasn't clear enough or you misheard me. What I said was there's a book out that came out several years ago called The Shooting Drugs, Prozac and its generation. And the book lays out the truth that so many of these mass killers over the past 17 or 18 years who have been people who have either been taking Prozac, Zoloft, Paxil, Cerazone, Luvox, Celexa, Effexor, Wellbutrin, or Ritalin. And the point the book is trying to make, that it's not the mental illness per se, it's the drugs. How they anesthetize a person. Now, I'll share this with you. I had some firsthand experience with this about, oh my God, how long ago? It's before, long time ago, about 15 years ago. I was at a stage in my life, very, very, very depressed, doing a lot of talk therapy, and the therapist I was seeing got frustrated. And at one point he said, listen, I don't think there's a whole lot more that we can do with you and this depression you're dealing with through talk therapy. So I'm going to recommend that you try pharmaceutical approach to this. So he sent me to a psychiatrist over here at Emory University. And we talked for about half an hour, and then she wrote a script for me for Prozac. Now, I had read the book listening to Prozac. I take it back. I had not read the book listening to Prozac at the time I got on this drug. I took it for 2 weeks, and then I was scheduled to go back and see the psychiatrist. And after 2 weeks, I went back in, and I said to her, listen, yesterday's dose was my last dose. I can't deal with this. I cannot take this drug. I would much rather have the depression than this drug. She said, why? I said, well, if you want me to really tell you why, I'll tell you why. I said, one of the ways I've always dealt with depression is get in the car and head for Florida. I put on Pink Floyd. I'll have a clipboard beside me in the front seat. You know, something to write on. I'll smoke a joint, and I'll spend 5-6 hours, 7 hours in the car until I find a good beach in the Panhandle, and then spend a few days down there. She said, yeah. And I said, usually I can write stuff. You know, as I'm driving down the road, I feel good, a little high. Don't try this at home, kids. A little high, write down notes to myself or little, maybe story ideas or poetry ideas or screenplay ideas, you know, stuff that never really materializes, but you still write it down anyway. And that's my therapy. And she said, so yeah, what happened? I said, well, the last time, I said about 6 days, 5 days ago, I decided to make a trip. I'm going to come back in time for my appointment with you, but I noticed when I got in the car, first of all, when I took a couple of hits on the joint, nothing happened. Secondly, when I tried to write, nothing happened. Third, when I listened to Pink Floyd, it was kind of irritating. And I said, fourth, I felt like whatever creativity I have, my consciousness, was in a glass box. And when I said that, she kind of leaned forward on her desk and said, in a glass box? What do you mean? I said, well, I felt like my consciousness was in a glass or a plastic box. My head, if you will, was in a plastic box, and I couldn't move. It was getting hard to breathe. No creative juices would flow. Nothing. I couldn't get high. I couldn't get low. I couldn't get up. Couldn't get down. Couldn't get left. Couldn't get right. Nothing. I was just there driving the damn car. And I said, I can't do that. And she said, well, Prozac is not for everybody. She said, you come to me with a recommendation that we should try something. So, how about if we try Paxil? And I said, Dr. whatever her name was, no thanks. And I left. And to make a long story short, the story is not about me and being depressed. The story is about what the drug did to me. And so I understand, it gave me kind of a look into that. It was after that I read the book Listening to Prozac, which was a pretty scary book, frankly, written by a psychiatrist who prescribed it for his patients and got some good results. But Prozac at the time was relatively new. And all I know is what I experienced after about 8 days of being on that drug. And it was the most claustrophobic, the weirdest feeling. And I understand if people say it divorces you from your emotions, I got that. I absolutely got that. Now, at the time, I was a single parent. And 14 years ago, Chris was, or 15 years ago when I did this, Chris was about 14 years old. And I guess when I made the trip, took off for a week, he went to stay with his mother who lived here in Atlanta. But I just knew that I couldn't do that and be a parent. I would rather deal with the depression by running, working in the yard, by talking with my friends, by focusing on all the trials and tribulations a 14-year-old has. And that's, you know, that was basically the therapy. It was a state of being that I was in for about 3 years, and it was horrible. Anybody that's gone through that kind of clinical depression, you know what I'm talking about. I have no idea what it is or what caused it. I'm glad it's gone. I think like most people, I get depressed once in a while. I'm sure you do. I know from the emails that I read from people who listen to this program, some of you have dealt with this. Especially the idea of depression. So, to sum up, to my emailer from Madison, Wisconsin, I'm not in the least suggesting that mentally ill people commit mass murder. What I am suggesting is that people who have treatable mental illness and are given pills, because that's the down and dirty way. Here, take this. Here, take some more of this. Oh, that doesn't work here. Then take this. That it is the medication that seems to have a direct effect on some of these activities. That's what I'm trying to suggest.
They just don't appreciate that you get tired. They're so hard to satisfy. You can tranquilize your mind.
Redefining Anger Management. It's Mike Malloy, only on Nova M Radio.
It's about 21 past the hour. Back to your phone calls here. Where were we? We were someplace. Yes, Evan is calling from Durham, North Carolina. Hey, Evan, welcome to the program.
Yes, yes. Thanks a lot. I was I tuned in when you were talking about Prince Bandar,
yeah,
and that sort of thing. And you remember actually in 2000, well, actually it might have been 2006, but 2007, he did this interview where he says, "You said we spend $400 billion and $50 billion of it was spent on corruption," and I say, you know, so what? What I'm trying to tell you is, so what? And he said that, and I was just like, wow.
Yeah, I seem to remember that. Just matter of fact. That's why I kind of snickered when I was going over that story from, I guess, from the Telegraph of the UK or BBC, whatever, the Telegraph, that there's some interest now that Tony Blair, as the head of the UK, may have violated BAE may have violated anti-corruption or anti-blackmail treaties or corruption treaty or what. I don't know what the hell they're talking about. Who's the joke on here? You're absolutely right. Who in the hell doesn't know that probably 30% of everything spent on the global market is payoff under the table? I mean, who is stupid enough not to believe that?
Or extortion, because I mean, you know, Tony Blair, but really, you know, I was kind of surprised when I heard about Blair, but he's not, he's on board. I think he's been on board the whole time. When they were doing the investigation, he was like the BBC or somebody was doing the investigation. Mm-hmm. He showed up and just shut the whole thing down, period. This was just before he left office, just shut it down, and was proud to do it. Proud to do it. I mean, and then you remember, you know, last year they had this, we are selling like $20 billion in weapon systems to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, that's...
They're just circulating this money round and round amongst themselves.
That was the payoff to get the Saudis to attend Bush's little pretend peace conference in Annapolis, Maryland. I think it was in Annapolis, yeah.
Okay. But, yeah, I mean, they're going to give that money back to, I guess, companies here. Those companies are going to trade it amongst themselves, going to end up back in Britain, then it's going to end up back in Saudi Arabia, and... I don't, man, it's incredible. It's incredible. It's not unexpected, but I just pulled this thing. When you mentioned that, I pulled them up on YouTube. If you type in Bandar and so what, his little excerpt comes up.
Bandar and so what?
Yeah.
I love that. All right, Evan, I got a boogie.
Yep.
All right, get ready to dance because we're going to dance. All right.
All right.
Okay. Hey. Just stay by the computer since you have to listen on the internet because we're going to dance here. How long is it? Two? It won't stretch for 2 minutes. All right, we promised people that we would do a kishka before the week was over, and we're running out of time. Or not do a kishka, but dance to Who Stole the Kishka. So how long does it run? About a minute 35. All right. Well, let's go ahead and cue it up and start. And if we run out of time, all right, everybody up. Come on, get up. Oh God, stand up. All right, you ready? Okay. Go ahead, let her rip, Kathy. Okay, here we go. Come on, get up. Get off your ass. Let's go. Hey. Woo-hoo. Come on, let's go. Bounce. Ho! Ha! 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 Yeah. Ooh! Round and firm and fully packed. It was hanging from the rack. Come on, turn it up.
While I turn my back.
Hey!
Who stole the kishka? Who stole the kishka?
Hey!
Who stole the kishka?
Hey!
From the butcher shop.
Hey! Come on your feet. Let's go. Come on, get up. Let's go. Ha, ha. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3. Prozac my ass. Get up and dance. 1, 2, 1.
You can have my shinka or my sweet tea.
Hey.
You can have my
hey.
Bring me back my kishka. Who stole the kishka?
Who stole the kishka? Who stole the kishka?
He found the kishka.
Yeah. Ho! Ho!
Listen, there's all kinds of ways to treat substance. I understand that.
Twenty-six before the hour. You know, one thing that never fails to amaze me, no matter how long I do talk radio, is how I can say something and someone will hear what I'm saying. I assume they hear what I'm saying. And they totally shred it and come up with a conclusion that has absolutely nothing to do with what I said and then attribute that conclusion to me. Now, I've just had two or three examples in the past 5 minutes, unrelated, but here's one. Mike, I enjoy the program and don't find a lot to disagree with, but your rather blanket dismissal of Prozac and other SSRI antidepressants bothered me. First of all, it bothered me because the drug has allowed me to function normally for the last 25 plus years. Prozac obviously was not for you. Talk therapy and self-medication with marijuana works better for you. Fine. But talk therapy did not work for me, and marijuana makes me paranoid beyond belief. The fact that you personally had a bad reaction does not mean that these drugs are inappropriate for everyone. Jesus Christ, did I say that, Kathy? Did I even come close to saying that?
Drugs are bad, okay?
This person goes on. If your dismissal of SSRIs prevents a psycho killer attack, great. If it discourages a severely depressed person from taking a medication that could actually treat them, return them to normality, not so great. Prozac is not for everyone. Really? But it is suitable for some, myself in particular. I realize you have a strong opinion, so that's one of the reasons you're successful, but you must know that the strength of a belief does not necessarily correspond to its accuracy. Prozac or no, I appreciate what you do. And then the writer signs it. From California. Where in what I said, or I'm sorry, not California, Costa Rica. Where in what I said does this writer get the idea that I issued a blanket dismissal of Prozac? You know, I specifically said just the opposite. Matter of fact, I have it right in front of me. Here's what I said. Oh, damn, where is it? Here's what I said, writer from Costa Rica. Where is it? It's right here, I swear to God. The book does not advocate totally banning the drugs because they help some people with pre-existing mental problems. But the wholesale use of them by normal people is causing an ever-increasing wave of senseless killings and shootings across America. I quoted that, and I also said that I fully understand. You know, I've had friends who were so over the over the edge that they wound up on Thorazine. I know what Thorazine can do for you. I used to work at a drug crisis center here in Atlanta way back in 1970 when the whole drug scene started to go crazy. No, I'm not medically trained, but I had 50 hours of training in the therapeutic approach to people who were freaking out on drugs like LSD, bad acid. And I understand, I do understand that not all drugs are bad for all people. Some drugs are good for people. Some drugs do wonderful things for people. But how in the hell do I get the impression that I had a blanket dismissal of Prozac? Oh, well. Back to your phone calls. Ramona is calling from Hammond, Indiana, listening on the Internet. Hey, Ramona.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks a lot. I got someone here that I think you might recognize.
Yeah? Who's that?
Ashley, my granddaughter.
Oh, 11-year-old Ashley.
Yeah, 11-year-old Ashley. Good
well,
news. Her daddy came home just before Christmas.
From Iraq?
Uh-huh.
Well, bless her heart. Put her on.
Okay. Hello?
Hey, what are you doing up so late?
Oh, it's the weekend, so,
true.
I just like to stay up.
How are you, Ashley?
I'm great. I've been doing really good.
Man, we haven't talked for a long time. When did your dad come home?
He came home, when was that? Well, I don't remember the date, but it was just before Christmas. He didn't get to stay long because he had to go back to Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me a little upset because he wasn't here for when I was in the spelling bee.
Oh, I'm sorry. Where is he now?
He's in Texas.
He's in Texas?
He should be up here by August, something.
Not until August. Are you going to go see him between now and then?
Well, I think I might go down there in the summer and then come back up.
Mm-hmm.
Come back up here with him.
Now, for people who are scratching their heads right now, Ashley, and saying, "Okay, what's this about?" Give us a recap. When did you and I first talk, and what was the subject of our conversation?
Well, we were I don't remember when we talked. It was a while ago, but it was about the protest against the war.
And
how I was protesting,
mm-hmm.
and how I've gotten stuff thrown at me and cussed at and all that.
And you with a dad in Iraq.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the big reasons why I protest, because I know all the wrong things that are going on over there.
Yeah, you do. How is your dad, Ashley?
He's good. I'm glad that he came home whole.
I hear you.
He's pretty good. And we're excited because tomorrow we're going to go to Valparaiso to speak to people at Valparaiso University with Veterans Against the Iraq War.
Is that still a religious college?
No.
I have an uncle who's long since passed away who graduated from that that college with a law degree. Valparaiso, Indiana. That, as a matter of fact, that's where he met the woman that became his wife. And the reason I remember it, I was just a little kid at the time, but the reason I remember it is he went there because he was real religious, you know. He was really into Christianity, and Valparaiso was at the time was I don't want to say it was a religious school, but they were very heavy into the Christian thing. I don't know. I just kind of floated off on that. Valparaiso, been there. It's a nice little town, isn't it?
Yeah.
What are you going to do there?
We're going with the Iraq Veterans Against the War.
Mm-hmm.
And me and my grandmother, we're going to speak about how we think the war is wrong and all the pain we went through with my dad being gone.
Mm-hmm. What do you know what your dad's opinion is about the war, Ashley?
Oh, yeah, he hates it.
Does he?
He hates it with a passion.
Is he like a regular army? Is he National Guard, Reserves, Marine Corps?
Oh, he's Army. Yeah, he works with computers, but no matter what, you're always still in danger.
Sure. I forget what you've told me about your mom.
Well, she's nice, and I've lived with her basically all my life.
Yeah. Your mom and dad are divorced?
Well, they never were married.
Oh, okay. And your mom lives there in Indiana where you live?
Yeah, we live in Highland.
Well, I'll bet you, when you heard that your dad was coming home, how did that make you feel? I hate that kind of a question. They always say that on television. Well, ma'am, when you watched the barn burn and all your cows go up in smoke, how'd that make you feel? I hate that kind of a question, but I just asked it. How did it make you feel, Ashley, when you found out your dad was coming home?
I was very excited. I was trying to plan all these surprise parties. And, well, it got cut down to one little get-together two.
Right,
but,
right.
Yeah, I was very excited about it.
And when you first saw him, did you have to go to Indianapolis or someplace for him to get off the plane, or did he come out to where you live, or what happened?
Yeah, he came out to us, and he stayed for a while at his wife's house.
And did... I mean, how long was he gone?
He was, well, at least a year or 15 months, I believe.
Yeah. You feel a little less freaked out about stuff now with knowing your old man is home?
Yeah. I still think it's all wrong, but...
Oh, sure. But I mean, just... of course it is. But I mean, just knowing that your dad is not there.
Yeah, it does make me feel very relieved and not so stressed out anymore.
Well, Ashley, I've said it before. You're a sweetheart. I hope you call in again, and I'm so glad your pop made it home okay. Next time you see him, of course, give him a great big kiss and just say, and a hug, and say, this is from that guy on the radio, and he'll say, what are you talking about, all right?
Okay.
Ashley, you're a good kid. Thanks for calling in, okay?
Okay, thank you.
And take care. Have a good night, sweetie.
With 25 sweet summers and hot fires in the cold, this kind of life makes that violence unthinkable. We'd like to play hockey, have kids and grow old. Fighters for Texaco, fighters for power.
Ten before the hour. I feel like I need a hit of Prozac. Thanks to everybody who made the show possible. Ian Huff, who engineered, answered your calls. Billy Foster, our technical director. Ben Birch, podcast manager. Chris in Minnesota, senior correspondent. Bob Alexander, our resident philosopher. Bridget Wolf is a writer in residence, although she really doesn't live here. Catherine Bay, our executive producer. Don't forget, Phoenix True Seekers. Scott Ritter and I are going to be there next Saturday night. Be there. Be there. Join us, okay? Go to 1480kphx.com and for ticket information. I know there's still tickets available, or the boss wouldn't allow me to keep saying this. So the fact that there are tickets available means you can still jump on board the train. It's going to be a lot of fun. Very quickly here, because we got into this discussion about the shooter in Illinois, and I don't want to get off of it. And I think this email pretty much ties it up. It's from BW writes, Mike, I come to this issue from both personal experience as a patient and as a psychotherapist. I was in clinical psych graduate school and therapy, and in one of my classes, we had to take the MMPI to familiarize ourselves with it. The results came back, and we all had meetings with the professor and read the results. His first question to me was, so, how long have you been this depressed? Yeah, that'll do it to you, right? I went to my therapist, got a referral to a psychiatrist, and started Prozac. I took it about 3 weeks, which, by the way, is about how long it takes to have any effect for most people. And one morning I woke up and walked around my house singing. The world had changed for me overnight. Actually, nothing in my world had changed. My perception of and relationship to the situations in my life had changed. I stayed on Prozac for about 2.5 years, and then decided I was ready to try life without the medication. With my psychiatrist's support, I eased myself off the medication. I only went back once while I was studying for my licensing exams and had so much anxiety I was crawling the walls. I still have times when I'm depressed, but I know I now have the tools and space in my life to deal with it until I can work it through. As a therapist, I referred a number of clients to psychiatrists for antidepressants. When people are so deep in the hole that they can't find a handhold to climb out, SSRIs are a lifeline. The medications can give someone a solid floor on which to stand to begin their climb back to the surface, to a life that is not defined by four walls and a bed. I watched clients find their way through the swamp of their lives to solid ground. I also watched clients detach from feelings. For those, I recommended a return trip to the psychiatrist and removal from the medication. The SSRIs are a tool, not a solution. They save lives. Obviously, they are also dangerous. Please note that the early indications are that the latest shooter had stopped taking the medication. I'm not an advocate for medication for everyone, and not at all for children. Just like it's not a great idea to give antibiotics for every little thing, it's a very bad idea to prescribe SSRIs at the drop of the hat. As a culture, we seem to have lost the knowledge of going within to regroup and reform ourselves. Depression is not always a disease. Often it's our psyches telling us that we need to hold our breath for a little while until we can find the new road to walk. And that certainly is, I think it's a point of view I was trying to make. As BW writes, the early indications are that the latest shooter had stopped taking his medication. Exactly. Now, whether that is a cause that produces the effect is debatable. So often it's people who I think the Virginia Tech guy was the shooter. Wasn't he someone who had stopped taking his medication? My point was, and I appreciate everybody who has emailed me about this tonight, because this, you know, it's an interesting topic, and it's fraught with personal experience that is not always the most pleasant. Those of us who've been there know about what we're talking here, what we're talking about here. But so many, it's my understanding that because these SSRIs literally, not metaphorically or figuratively, but mathematically and literally, alter your brain chemistry. They slow down the dissolving or reuptake of serotonin. And in altering brain chemistry, I just don't think, especially given all that we're discovering now about the brain, I think we've only just, what, understand just some of the most basic functions of the brain and chemical reactions within the brain, and we're, the people who work on this, especially neurologists, are discovering stuff every single day. What was this thing the other day, Kathy, where deep electrical stimulation into the brain causes a flood of memories that are just absolutely suppressed or appear not even to exist anymore? And the obvious possible application of that is for Alzheimer's patients. So there are all sorts of things going on. And I think Prozac might have been ahead of its time. A lot of us, I think, who took it 15 or 20 years ago and wound up with that kind of your head stuck in a glass box kind of feeling, the solution to that was to stop taking it, to withdraw slowly. I stopped abruptly, but I hadn't been taking it that long. But no, I agree with the people who have emailed me here, whether I read your email on the air or not, that there is definitely a use for SSRIs. I think, like most medications, though, in this country, they are too easily prescribed. And I think part of that is a result of insurance companies. They don't want you spending a lot of time in talk therapy at $125 a session. They would much rather have you get a prescription for $125 a month, or whatever Prozac costs now. So, but anyway, thanks to everybody for sharing some of your personal stuff about this. Makes me feel a little less crazy. Ah! All right, have a great weekend. We're out of here. Take care. Do take care. Keep it lit. And thanks for the dance. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are. I'm going straight.